Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on the Tour of Coach podcast, where we bring you the best mental coaches, fitness experts, teachers, players, everything from my journey in the game of golf to help you learn to play better golf, teach better golf, and enjoy the game. Come on in. We're going to have some fun. All right. So joining me here on the Tour Coach, it's been a while since I've had him on. I've kind of gotten lonely missing him. I hadn't had my quality time with JP since the U.S. Open, I think. I don't think I've seen you since we had that wonderful dinner and red wine at the U.S. Open, I kind of think.
I think we did. We did. Did we do a podcast there? I think we might have.
Yeah, of course. We always pull podcasts out of nowhere. I'm live from a rental car about to drink 13 Lone Star beers at the minimum this afternoon with my old college teammates. So sitting in with JP. JP, first of all, kudos on a great year. I mean, I know it's the end of the year. Kind of guess we're starting a new one. But talk a little bit about the end of the year for you, the end of the season for you, and a little bit about the Ryder Cup. Congrats on all of that. And let me know your thoughts on that, and we'll kind of go from there.
What a whistle stop sort of end of the year, as it always is. You know, you kind of come through the first part of the summer, and things are, you know, relatively kind of sensible and civilized. Then all of a sudden the playoffs come up back and forth after a couple of majors, and then you know, this year, and obviously last year was President's Cup up in Montreal. This year, up to the Ryder Cup. I mean, a real privilege to be representing a player on either of the teams. You know, mm-hmm. I get the usual sort of comments, and I get a few bits of banter from the European team. You know, and obviously I grew up in Ireland watching Ryder Cups really all of my teenage years and up through my 20s, and you know, always, of course, cheered for Europe, but it gives you a different sort of perspective when you are on another team, and you have a lot of respect for the captain and the vice captains. You know, I worked for Gary Woodland, and I've seen Sneds a couple of times at Sea Island, you know, and seeing how passionate those guys are, and how big a deal it is for the players. You know, it's so special for the players on both sides, and you know, it was a really passionate affair, walking with Harris and Colin, you know, as they took on Tommy Fleetwood and Rory McIlroy, who, frankly, Tony, I don't think there's a foursomes pairing past or present in Ryder Cup or President's Cup that would have been able to live with Tommy and Rory. You know, it seemed, you know, from memory, they were at least five under after eight holes in foursomes, alternate shots, you guys call it. And I think they were five, six, seven under the following day. So, you know, I'm a little bit, I'm sad for Colin and Harris, because, you know, there's guys out there critiquing strokes game metrics and things in foursomes, and you and I both know foursomes are a completely different game. So it's almost impossible to critique a tee shot in foursomes compared to a tee shot in four ball when your partner's already down the middle of the fairway. It's a completely different entity. And from my perspective, I thought Harris played really well. This envelope rule that they have, left in a position where he didn't get to play golf yesterday, but and texting, you know, he took that like a man. He was upset, but he took it like a man and took it as a member of the team. And I think Rory spoke wonderfully well about the crowds. I think it's great to see crowd support. It's better off if they cheer really loudly for their own team as opposed to against other teams. You know, again, like growing up in Ireland, where you would have, you know, Ireland against Northern Ireland in soccer and Rangers against Celtic in soccer and things, I always felt it was a much better, more appropriate thing to be really going for your team as opposed to wishing ill on other teams. And, you know, I think we came through that all really well. I thought it was fantastic to see a bit of a spectacle at the end. There was a lot of nerves, and there was a lot of emotion whenever Europe won. And again, I think we should be celebrating a really fine European Ryder Cup team and an American team that could have done a couple of things better, but gave them a good push towards the end of the event.
Yeah, I thought the way it finished yesterday was amazing. One, nobody, I don't think many people saw it coming right after the first 2 days, but I don't buy into, I'm curious what you, everybody's talking about analyzing what we need to do better. I mean, man, they just played great golf. I mean, Rory and Fleetwood and Shane and Rom, I mean, those guys just all played phenomenal golf. And like you said, I saw some of the stats about how many under some of the pairings were. Like, man, I don't know who we could have put out there that was going to, I mean, you know, I mean, my only critique might have been the golf course could have been harder.
Yeah, you know, the golf course did. It certainly, you know, I felt that, again, kind of watching Harris's match, Harris and Colin spent a lot of time in the fairway. and a little bit of time in the rough. And Rory and Tommy spent a bit of time in the rough. And really, the rough wasn't the rough almost helped because we got a lot of rain on, or like what night was it? Wednesday night. And then Thursday was supposed to be a complete washout. It wasn't too bad. There were a few showers through Thursday. But you know, when they hit it in the rough, they almost took the spin off the golf ball. A lot of times, they took aggressive tee shot lines off some of the shorter holes out there, and all of a sudden they were able to hit wedges in. And really, as long as you got the number right, the ball wasn't going to do anything. So I agree with you. You know, golf course setup could have been more favorable. But again, you've got to kind of take your hat off to them. You know, having played a lot of foursomes where I grew up, you know, the intensity level and the aggression and the ability to execute that Rory and Tommy and a lot of those guys really, really displayed in foursomes is incredible. It's a different form of golf. It's very hard to get into your rhythm. You know, if you don't have it going out there, it's going to be very difficult to get it. I mean, I watched, you know, those guys birdie one, birdie two, you know, and Tommy then holes 30 feet on Friday straight out of the gate to match Colin and Harrison. They really shut down any momentum that the American team, I think across the board, I think that's really where the Europeans did so well. And it was interesting listening to Paul McGinley, who's a great stalwart of the game and somebody who's helped that European Ryder Cup system become what it is. And he said, you know, it's so important to gain your own momentum and stifle the momentum of others when you're playing match play, and never let anybody have a free shot. Always give them something to think about. Always put them under some pressure. You know, to be honest, I think that's one of the beauties of match play. And I do think, you know, Europeans, we play a lot more match play than America. I know you know there's a US amateurs and all that sort of stuff, but we play match play inter club stuff all the time.
All the time.
We're kind of used to it. And I think the Ryder Cup just means something a little bit different to the European team than it does. And I'm not suggesting that in a negative way. I just think the European team are so kind of embroiled in the historic wondrousness of the Ryder Cup and how they've grown. And you know, the American team were so dominant for so many years. And you know, they've got a few things to patch up. But I was pleased. I saw what a great effort Keegan made, and Darren May, who's one of our you know, one of our fellow coaches. Darren did such a terrific job bringing the whole player support group together, and you know, big shout out to him. And you know, again,
That's awesome.
it was great to hang out with you know, Schreiber and Chris Como and all the guys that we see, but we don't get the chance maybe to do a dinner and to have a chat and really have a bit of fun with them that we did through the week. So it was very special for me from that perspective.
That's awesome. And congrats again. I mean, obviously, you know, United States fans wish it would have turned out better, but like it was a hell of an effort yesterday, and it was cool. I followed you and followed all, you know, your posts through the week, and it was fun to watch. And obviously, as knowing you as well as I do, I mean, it was just cool to support and watch you guys work up there. I mean, I thought it was awesome, you
Yeah,
know. So moving past the Ryder Cup, so now we're into the fall series and heading towards a new PGA Tour season. I'm wondering when we're going to get our off season. Are we getting any time off, JP?
I don't think we do get any time off. I think they just like us to work. I mean, I took the day off today and ended up doing all my accounts that I haven't done for 6 months. So that probably took me 2.5 hours. But yeah, it kicks off again. Obviously, I was out in Napa, which was kind of more of a Ryder Cup prep.
Yeah.
Mississippi coming up, and the Korn Ferry finals are swinging in. I know you've got Emilio, I think Emilio Gonzalez, one of your players. He's already locked up his PGA Tour card. And I think it's worth talking a little bit about that. I mean, you know, it's you really are playing for 51 to 100, aren't you? Now it's like those guys who come up through the Korn Ferry. I mean, they're not going to get into signature events. It's going to be difficult for the guys who are in signature events and the guys that are in majors to really drop significantly outside of that top, say, 60. So it's a very, very complex, nuanced little role that these guys play now.
I do think, and I could be totally wrong on this, but I do think this year's a little different in the fact that they've gone to 100 PGA Tour cards last year. So from my understanding, basically 1 through 20 of the Korn Ferry kind of replaces the old 101 to 125-ish, right, on the shuffle. So I think that from talking to players, like, this is a good year to get it from your Korn Ferry because they should get in all the events that aren't signature events, at least create some playing opportunities. And I know with that, I don't know if it's what's an Aon list or whatever they've got. I know there's some ways that you can earn your way up to the, you know, you got to play good, right? But I mean, I'm certainly not going to complain about having a guy get his tour card and an opportunity to do good for himself. I mean, it's different, obviously, than it used to be before all the elevated events. But, you know, it's like we always say, good golf cures a lot of things. So if he goes out there and plays well, and he's had a heck of a year. Interesting stat. You'll like this. Got caddy told me this. So the round, his third round in Boise, okay, he shot 10 under, which put him up there, have a chance to win. His average proximity to the hole for 18 holes was inside 9 feet for 18 holes.
That's very, very accurate, isn't it?
That's pretty good. I said, well, no wonder we shot low.
You know, and I want to know your thoughts on this. Like, obviously, you know, knowing Emilio, very, very, obviously a very accurate ball striker, not a particularly long player from what I can gather. And then, like, we start out, Kapalua is not going to be played. Sony's going to give him a chance. Amex gives him a chance. And then we're into some really kind of like long, demanding golf courses. And, you know, interesting to know, like, have you spoken to him about how you'll schedule things? Are you, you know, basically just going to try and play in every event that you can get into? Or are you doing like work on trying to put on a little bit of ball speed over the off season, or what off season there is? It's always, you know, because for me, it's like I'm trying to make sure that I want the players to have the best chance of playing the golf courses that we know that they can compete on, whilst giving them a little bit of a leg up on the courses that, you know, are going to be more challenging for them.
You know, he's added some speed, a good bit of speed and distance over the last year. He's really gotten aggressive in the gym. He's worked with the folks at Urban Golf Performance. I know he's been real dedicated to what they're doing, and he's added some speed. So, you know, he's, I mean, I wouldn't by many means call him long, but I think he feels like he's adequate. I mean, I think like if it was a golf course that was wet and extremely long, wouldn't be great for him. But he does on golf courses where he can chase it out, he's actually can be pretty long, you know, he's the way he's learned to play. But, you know, he's such a good iron player. I think we've talked about scheduling. Obviously, I think in the beginning you go into it with that. You want to play the golf courses that you match up. Like Sony for him to me is good. You know, I think San Diego, because he plays hard golf courses really well, right? Because he's such a good, he hits 80% of his fairways and he hits so many greens. Like, so he feels like hard golf courses. So I feel like Torrey would be a great place for him. You know, could be. And I feel, and
that's,
like
that's one of the things that amazed me, Tony, about you, like Ben Griffin. You know, Ben's come out and played a couple of years where he's just pretty much played every single week. And not only has he played every single week, he's played incredibly well. We've seen him rise up in towards the top 10 in the world and play in the Ryder Cup. You know, but it's been interesting seeing somebody like that who's actually had the stamina, had the engine to go out there and play in every single event. And Sungjae Im was another player who really got onto the world stage and did a similar sort of thing. I mean, he was playing, I think he played close to 40 events or something one year. And, you know, again, that's something I kind of question with myself with some of these young players. You know, if you're young and you don't have a family and you've got a good engine and you're fit and you're strong, you know, should you just go ahead and try and play in as many as you can? And how will that affect, you know, preparation and things? Does that mean a Monday is just a complete rest day and things like that? It's very interesting. We used to always say like three on, a couple of weeks off to recharge, and then three on again. But some of these guys are just, you know, I've heard of guys playing 7-8 in a row, and I find that incredible from a stamina and even from the mental, the fortitude it takes to continue to play that much golf.
So I think it's interesting watching different players and where they are at different phases in their life, and using this as a Korn Ferry. You know, Korn Ferry, to me, like, you get in some stretches where you just have to play if you're trying to get a PGA Tour card. Whereas Emilio he got played good enough that he was able, you know, they've had some off weeks, and he's not really taken other off weeks, but, you know, he's young, he's engaged. Whereas like a Rick Lamb is over 30 and he's got a 1 year old, right? And for him, playing 6-7 in a row doesn't work, right? And so he's, you know, he's in 35th, 37th, so he's got a chance to get a tour card with a good last 2 weeks. And he lost in a playoff run this year. But it's interesting how different players have to figure out their own formula. And, I mean, how do you help players do that? Kind of curious, because, like, to me, that's been something I've tried to get better at. Like, you can't just treat every player the same. I mean, everybody's got different dynamics at home, different needs. you know.
As cliched as it is, you know, even from those, you know, the time constraints and the preparation of where they live and, you know, where they are in their lives with, you know, as you say, 1 year olds or fiancés or getting married, you know, you have to treat them all as individuals, and not only as individuals, they're individuals in a certain specific point of their lives. And I suppose that's when you look at the gray hair that I've got on my chin and some of the stuff you've got poking out from the beside your hat, I suppose it gives us an opportunity.
You know what caused it. Yeah.
it gives us an opportunity to kind of draw on our experience from life and, you know, getting married and having kids and being able to be advisors to them. And then you've got to tailor their preparation and periodize the work that they're doing and be respectful of the fact that they are in those different points of their lives. You know, I mean, I've got Blades Brown playing this week in the first of the Corn Ferry finals. You know, well, I think it's probably technically the second, but he's 18 years old and he just wants to go play golf every single day. And then, you know, to your point, we've got somebody like Louis Oosthuizen, who's chosen a different path in his career as he's approaching his sort of mid-40s, and he's out playing in the Dunhill this week. And, you know, I'm always there for him, but his big priority is spending time with his three girls and being a dad and a husband. And so, yeah, I mean, I think for those listening to the lives that we lead, you know, being respectful of them, treating them as individuals, understanding what constraints and what opportunities we're going to have to help them prepare the best, and then tailor a plan where we get the most out of those times that certainly that we have with them.
What do you do now? How do you guys get your folks ready, you know, for the start of the new season? And curious, like, how much, you know, a couple falls ago, I came over there while you were doing some 3D stuff. It's interesting. We've talked a little bit about Emilio, and, you know, several months ago I had talked about to him about maybe doing some of that stuff. And he said to me the other day, you know, I'm playing the best golf of my life. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah. And he goes, I'll do whatever you want to do, but I'd rather we really just keep doing exactly what we're doing through this stretch, right? Because he's playing the best. And he's nervous a little bit about, like, I don't even want to hear something. I don't even want to hear you, JP, in the corner talking about something. I want to just keep doing what I'm doing. I'm hitting it the best I've ever hit it.
Well, I think, if you know, that's a perfect opportunity. If you can buy him a pair of headphones or have everyone sign an agreement not to say anything and get a 3D evaluation done, get a body evaluation done, and then say, right, I'm going to keep that in the bank. And anytime he starts to struggle, I'm going to go back and draw upon that and say, okay, you've lost a little bit of range in your deep squat, or you've on 3D here, you've lost 10 degrees of torso right. rotation compared to when you were at your best. And, you know, I think that'd be an ideal time to do it. If he feels really, really strongly that he's in a really good spot, it'd be a perfect time for him to do it.
You know, for me, that's where, you probably don't know this, but I am sneaky sometimes.
I know, which is sneaky.
But that's where, though, I have during this stretch used some sports box while I've been out there on the range, right? Yeah. I'm just filming like I'm always filming in my iPad, and he doesn't even know I've got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just storing some of that stuff. But also, we have talked, like, you know, obviously one thing he has talked about is evaluating some of his equipment. In fact, one of the things I'll talk to you about off the air is, like, when he wants to come, he does all his he's always done his equipment with Craig there at Sea Island, right? Yeah. And wants me to come with him so I can hang out and he can bounce some stuff off me. And I told him, you're usually pretty nice about letting me come on the island. You normally don't start shooting at me when I go over the bridge or anything. So, you know, that was the one of the biggest things we were going to tackle this off season, and no big changes, but there were a couple things in his set where he was like, you know, a couple places where he, one of the things was in particular, like, with all of the great equipment they have now, like, at the top of his set, like, they come out a little low, your 4 and 5 irons and 3 irons, and a little flat, right? And especially the way he hits it. So, like, looking at some options with maybe to launch it a little higher, create a little more spin with your 5 or your 4 iron, things like that. Nothing like wholesale changes, but you know, so that's what kind of, those are kind of some of the things we're looking at in the off season.
It's very cool. You know, it's a fabulous resource we have at Sea Island. You know, Craig Allen's who you're referring to, and Craig's been a great support to me, and he looks after the performance center, but he also will do a full, pretty much, you know, Craig's affiliation is with Titleist, but he'll do a pretty much an agnostic deep dive into you know, everything that you're doing. And I'm in this sort of a similar situation with Harris. We've noticed that on tight, like Linksy type turf, his iron play has been an awful lot better. And then some of the kind of more like the Zoysia ball sitting up a little bit, he hasn't felt like the strike has been as good. So we do have a set of irons that's been sent. They've kind of beveled the leading edge just a little bit to see if we can get a little bit more consistency through different turf types. And you know that, as you know, I mean that's the type of detail now that we really have to go into. You know, when he felt like he was hitting it different at Portrush to the way he was able to hit it in Atlanta, and then is that him, or is that the grass, is that the bounce, or the sole or the leading edge on his irons? And you know, those sorts of things are very interesting, and it's a really cool part of our job to continually be pushed to try and figure out little ways to find where that half or 1% is.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what's going to be your first stop of the new year?
I will probably go American Express. American Express is great. I mean, Harris's agency company run it. Great group of lads there, and we always have fun. There's, you know, there's three golf courses. There's going to be a lot of good players going to play. Kapalua is obviously going to make some people wonder whether they're going to go to Sony, which is obviously a great event. I think we might find some of the best players in the world starting their season and at the American Express. And you know, there's a who's who of golf out there. It's kind of, you know, I've gotten to know it over the years. It's our version in Europe is the Dunhill Links, which is this week, and the American Express is fantastic. Gets dark at 4:45, 5 o'clock, so you know we get done a little bit early, and it's always a good atmosphere over there. So we're you know, we'll be excited for that. I'll probably do that one. A couple of the signature events on the West Coast. Normally do Pebble Beach and the Genesis event, which of course was played at Torrey Pines, I think, last year with the fires. I hope those things have sort of settled down. So it's weird starting to think about that. I'll be looking forward to the RSM Classic, which will be fun. I might squeeze in one more, but after a long week at the Ryder Cup and trying to just kind of get things situated, it's a nice time to be sitting here on my porch chatting to you.
I think we all could use a little time off. I know you deserve it, but looking forward to it. I plan to be at the American Express. I think, obviously, with all the stuff going, they haven't announced what they're doing with the Century yet, have they? The replacement golf course?
No, I don't believe that they've announced anything for me yet. I know that Kapalua is not in a situation where it will definitely not host.
Right.
The first, and I know they did go from 8 signature events to 9. So were they to shed one, then of course they're back to 8. So I could foresee a situation where maybe that's just what they do.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to hopefully be. I should be at the American Express. We should reconvene and do a pod and have a good steak and wine dinner.
That'd be lovely. And anytime, you know, you want to bring Emilio over, it's you know you're always welcome. And Craig, I know, loves
yeah.
to work.
Oh, absolutely. That, so. I enjoy it, and we're going to plan that. We're going to actually plan that in November. I'll get with you on that, and hopefully you'll be there. We'll get to hang out.
Yeah, sounds good, Tony. See you.
You're the best, JP. Talk to you soon, brother.
Talk to you soon. See ya. Bye.